Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Speaking of good duos, Al Michael and Chris Collinsworth certainly are Sunday nights on NBC, and we are thrilled to say hello to Al. He's good enough to join us here. Damon Radwan-Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. Mr. Michaels, how are you today, sir?
Fantastic. You guys have a three-man booth. I used to have a bunch of those in my past, but I'm just happy right now to be with my man, Double C, Chris Collinsworth, on Sunday Night Football.
Guys, no doubt, you do a great job, and it's always interesting to see what surprises, I think, the two of you during a game. And like us, I'm sure that you guys were very surprised that Aaron Donald was only a rumor in this game. He didn't really flash or have a standout moment the entire night, and you get long odds on that.
Well, even the great ones have a night off once in a while, and that certainly was the case, and they schemed him up pretty well and kept him obviously out of the backfield, kept Garoppolo clean, though the 49ers had, you know, a really good plan, and, you know, Chris talked about it, got into it early about, you know, protecting Garoppolo. A lot of stuff was thrown behind the line of scrimmage, a lot of short stuff. When he had to go deep, he picked the right moment to do it. So I think Kyle Shanahan came up with a great game plan, and they were able to neutralize Donald, which is something that rarely happens. And the other guy whose name I barely mentioned last night was Jalen Ramsey. Because not only is he one of the top corners in the league, but they've been using him in kind of the way that Seattle was using Jamal Adams, even though Adams is a safety. They're moving him all over the field. And, you know, in the days when Troy Polamalu was at Pittsburgh, I think, you know, Ty Matthew in Kansas City, those guys may play one position, but they're liable to line up anywhere. And the Rams were doing that with Ramsey in the last couple of games and with great effectiveness. And last night, I hardly mentioned his name. So they took out the two big guys on defense, and they were no factor last night.
So what did we learn more as a result of last night's game? That the 49ers are good or that the Rams are flawed?
Ray, we learned that the NFL is ridiculously and insanely unpredictable. And that when people tell me that they've looked at this number and that number, and they're going to make their bet predicated upon some nonsense, I go, why don't you just throw a dart at the wall? Because we go in there 2 weeks ago, and we don't think that Philadelphia has a chance. I mean, the Niners are banged up, but Philadelphia is like triply banged up. And what happens? The Eagles win the game. And then we go in last night, and the Rams are playing very well, if it wasn't for kind of a bogus interference call in the Buffalo game. They come in undefeated. They're ready to go. Everybody's healthy. Goff looks great. Running backs are all healthy. Great receivers. Aaron Donald on defense and all of that. And so, Ray, what we've learned is it's the old thing. I keep saying it. Nobody knows anything. But here we are yik-yakking away and filling some time and content and providing content. And, you know, that's what we do for a living. And you know that as well as anybody. But by the way, you provide great content. I will tell you that, though.
We all love Ray's content.
Probably need to
much.
Have a conversation with my wife.
I'd like to have that conversation with your wife to find out the inner workings of the mind of the one of the great Ray Ratto, who, boys, I have known for 40 years when Ray was just a pup running around in the Peninsula Times newsroom with Leonard Coppett as his shepherd. Those were the days.
Did he have a press pass and a fedora?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, we'd like to have Ray's wife on the show. Unfortunately, I don't think Ray's going to let that happen. Speaking of weird stuff, the referee, I don't even know what to call it, shenanigans? That felt like about as weird a referee game between the weird announcements about Jared Goff and the Jerick McKinnon play. That's up there for weird days for refs, is it not?
Yeah, I would say so. I think part of this is, even though it hasn't reared its ugly head too much this year, because of travel, what the league has been trying to do is not keep the same guys together for every game. I mean, in the old days, up until last year, you'd have a referee and he'd be working basically with the same people all year long. This year, they move them around, and a lot of these guys get assigned to games by geography. So I'm assuming that a lot of the officials last night were geographically proximate to the Bay Area. It's my understanding. So they're working with different crews, and then, I mean, to screw up the thing, you know, in the first half at some point, and they rule it one way, now they have to rule it the other way, and I think Chris said somebody got a phone call. I mean, clearly that was the case, because it was pretty obvious what the call was. And they made the wrong call on the field, and then the wrong call when they were telling us that the call stands. And then New York was calling, probably frantically, to say, guys, you got to get this straight. And we were having a little off-air conversation during, at that point, with Terry McCauley, who ref 3 Super Bowls and is our, you know, guy now for NBC. Terry does a fantastic job with us, and even Terry was confused, and he says, I don't know what's going on there, and they don't know either.
Al Michaels on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line. Good enough to join us the Monday after here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. You and your broadcast partner, Chris Collinsworth, last night were discussing the always relitigated Jimmy Garoppolo, and that certainly comes with the territory of being a 49ers quarterback. But it does feel like for every 3 positive steps forward, there's that step backwards, which leaves open the discussion of who is Jimmy Garoppolo really. We know he's their best option, but what do you think you're looking at in terms of Jimmy Garoppolo, not only what he means to Kyle Shanahan, but where he stands in the hierarchy of NFL quarterbacks?
Well, if he's healthy, and he certainly was a heck of a lot healthier last night than he appeared to be in the Miami game when they had to pull him, I think he's a pretty good quarterback. And I think the one statistic we had last night, and we showed the graphic, you know, in his career, he's never lost back-to-back games. So that's a guy who has proven to be pretty resilient. And he may not, you know, flash as much as people would want him to. And obviously, when you're talking about a franchise that had, you know, Joe Montana and Steve Young for starters, obviously, that's a pretty good standard. But, you know, guys, every once in a while, you got to throw in that clunker. And I don't hear anybody today saying that Aaron Rodgers has lost it. He threw a pick 6 yesterday. He threw another interception. They got their heads handed to him. Aaron Rodgers is still pretty good. Obviously, he's got, you know, a longer resume than does Garoppolo. But I think when Jimmy's been healthy, he's been very good. And again, I go back to that statistic about not losing back-to-back games. So there's a guy who, whatever problems he had the week before, he got better physically. They came up with a good game plan, and I think he and Shanahan make a great pairing. He hasn't played that many games to compare him to the greats. You can't do that. And again, in San Francisco, what are you looking at? You're looking at guys who go into the Hall of Fame. Willie, still to be determined. Can he win for you? Took you to the Super Bowl last year.
You mentioned in an earlier answer that, you know, the NFL is as unpredictable as, you know, it's an amazingly unpredictable league this year. Have you worked out any theories as to why it is more unpredictable than normal, or is this standard and we're just not figuring it out yet?
Ray, I think it's pretty unpredictable every year. The difference this year is training camp was so much different, and the season is so much different, and games are being rescheduled on Tuesdays, and you know, and games from Sunday to Monday, and the next week, and the bye week goes here, and you know, pretty soon we're going to get a Thursday morning game, I'm convinced. So we have all of that going on, but I think through the years, it's been very unpredictable. And people say, well, I've never seen it like this, but in reality, we have seen it like this. We have seen all of these crazy upsets. We have seen games that you're going, wait a second, that team can't do this. The Miami Dolphins can't fly 3,000 miles into the wind, get off the plane, play a day game, and destroy the 49ers. I mean, it can't happen, but it does happen. And I'll say this. This is why people love football. They love the National Football League because the National Football League provides, on a week-to-week basis, unbelievable drama. And I think you guys know that if you go onto Red Zone at around 1 o'clock Pacific time on any Sunday and you got four games that are just wacky, crazy, going down to the end, people love that. They love it. And yesterday there were a bunch of those games, including Tennessee and Houston, the way that game ended and the decisions that go into it, and then there's overtime. And I mean, Red Zone is, you need to take a blood pressure pill if you're a football fan, and especially if you've got some bets going. When you get to about the 10-1 time, Pacific, you go to Red Zone, and these four or five games are just coming down to the end. Always in the late window, something's coming down to the end. Last night was one of the few times that the Sunday night game has not come completely down to the end, even though it was a one-possession game. And that's why people love it, because a lot of television is scripted, phony, reality show, nonsense drama with laugh tracks. The National Football League is unscripted, complete wackiness. Unfortunately, we do have a laugh track in there right now, or a soundtrack, which I hope we can get rid of at some point and get some fans back in the stands.
You sound like a man who'd bet Tennessee and gave the 3.5.
Ray, I'll tell you this. I've said this many times before because people they think I must be a big gambler because, you know, I've been the rascal through the years, and I'm always mentioning the point spread, or especially the over-under. I have a lot of fun with that. And now, of course, everybody's doing that. But, Ray, I'm telling you right now, if I had to bet football, there's a chance I'd be living under a freeway overpass. Because I don't know any more than anybody else knows. I do in the sense that, I mean, we meet with the players, and the coaches, and the owners, and the general managers. We study, you know, Chris does a scouting tape every week. We read everything. We have great access. And despite all of that, I might as well throw a dart and tell you who's going to win the game. I have no clue. You know, we're going out to the game last night. I mean, of course the Rams are going to win. The Rams will probably win by 2 touchdowns. What happens? We know what happens.
So you did have the Titans minus 3.5, is what you're saying.
I didn't even know the line. What was the line? Was it Titans minus 3.5 in that game? It was a heck of a game. Heck of a game.
I want to ask about this, what you learn in that access, specifically about a guy that I actually don't think we've mentioned on the show yet today, which is our own mistake, and that's Fred Warner. Because I've watched a lot of tremendous linebackers, and there's something about him where he does not have the physical dominance that a lot of those guys have, but he seems to be everywhere making every play.
Yeah, I mentioned it last night on the air because 54 in Seattle, Bobby Wagner, reminds me in many ways of Warner. They wear the same number. You know, they're not exactly the same, but both guys they're just there. They lead their team in tackles. They run the defense. They have a great nose for, you know, where the ball is going to be. I think that, you know, Wagner's been in the league longer, and that team has had more success through the years since Bobby's been there than has San Francisco. So maybe Warner is not thought of the same way that Bobby Wagner is. But I see great similarities in what the two of them do. They play the same position. And as I say, they run the defense. They know what they're talking about. They know what they're doing. And we got to have a good meeting with him before the last game. And he's a sharp kid and a really nice kid. And And he's one of those guys you root for. And then clearly, when you watch him play, you have nothing but admiration for him.
Al Michaels, the voice of Sunday Night Football on NBC. And I couldn't help but notice someone in a production meeting said, let's give the South Bay just a little bit more love. We got some B-roll of the Apple campus last night. Normally, it's all the Golden Gate Bridge money shots. But no, we got Apple campus.
I know it. I got to take some crap from anti-social media. Somebody says, doesn't Michaels know how the Golden Gate Bridge got named? You know, some pedantic, what can I tell you, probably professor at some junior college. I know how it was named. We had a shot last night of the sun going down behind the Golden Gate Bridge, and it was a beautiful shot. And I said something about that's why they call it the Golden Gate Bridge. I wasn't speaking literally. But, I mean, you know, number one, I love the Golden Gate Bridge. I just think I can look at that all day long. I lived up there for 12 years, as I think you guys know. And, I mean, to me, to think that the plans for that were drawn, you know, 85, 90 years ago, fantastic.
It is.
It's gorgeous. It's just a gorgeous sight. And, you know, that's one of those things you look at from any angle, from Marin in, from San Francisco out, from, you know, looking out toward the ocean, looking in from the ocean. Whichever way you look at that bridge, even as a kid, before I moved to California, I said, God, I want to see that someday. And then obviously got to see it and cross it many, many times. But, you know, in the South Bay, you're right. Now we and of course, I lived in Menlo Park for 12 years, so I was kind of, you know, close to the South Bay. And we had the Apple campus is unbelievable. In fact, when I left there last night and when we turned around after the taking off to the north, it was a tremendous sight to see from the air as well. And, guys, I don't know, maybe next time we'll do the salt evaporator flash, if you want, or the dumb part of the bridge. We can throw that in there. But you tell me what you want us to show, and we'll do it for you. Starbucks.
That was good. Whatever. That was good. Look at you painting with words, though, as a broadcaster talking about the Golden Gate. Like, how dare you? Seriously.
How dare you? And I got to put up with this nonsense from some whatever. You know, what can I tell you? Oh, my God. Anyway, that's life in the big city, boys, or life in the South Bay. What can I say?
Exactly, life in the South Bay. You're obviously watching a lot of football, Al. It's been a weird year where I think it's hard to identify the best teams, particularly in the NFC. Who do you feel like is the best you've seen?
Well, you know, you could have said Green Bay up until yesterday, and then I'm not so sure about that. Nobody's so sure about anything at this point. Seattle's obviously very good, but, you know, Seattle... When you look at them, I mean, they could have lost the New England game. I mean, it ends at the one-yard line. Cam Newton looked like he was going to score and didn't. Russell Wilson works unbelievable magic last week, going 94 yards with a little over a minute. So, I mean, Seattle could be 3-2, but instead they're 5-0. Wilson is a magician, and right now, in a word, he's just, you know, fantastic and would probably win the MVP award, or should win it if that vote were held today. But it's a week-to-week thing, as we all know. There's nobody in the NFC East that you're going to put in that category. Bears are 5-1. How good are they? I don't know. I mean, you start with one guy, Trubisky. You bring Foles in. They're playing well. I'll tell you, an interesting game next week is going to be the Monday night game when Chicago plays the Rams.
No doubt.
In L.A. Expect the Rams to throw in another clunker. So we'll see what happens in that game. Yeah, you know, the West, I mean, Seattle, obviously. I'm not discounting the Rams at this point. If the 49ers can get healthier, who knows? I mean, they go to New England. New England is not what they were at the beginning of the season. You know, you get on a little bit of a run, and maybe something happens. Arizona's pretty good. We're going to, I think, find out a lot about them tonight when they meet Dallas. So, you know, it's a movable feast, but it is most years. And, again, this is what it's like. When people say to me, you know, who's in the Super Bowl, going, again, let's go back to throwing darts, because it's anybody's guess at this point.
Al Michaels, one of the most iconic voices. And I must ask, in our final question, and thank you so much for an extended amount of time and all your patience and for putting up with Ratto We really, really appreciate it. But Al, I have to ask the man who is the architect of the most famous question ever asked at a hockey rink. Do you believe in miracles? What you think of the retirement of Doc Emmerich today? Emmerich.
Well, it's interesting because they announced it, and they had a big conference call this morning, and I was asked to be a part of it, and I was. And when I woke up this morning and I turned on the my iPad, and I thought that, you know, I thought I saw that Doc Emmerich was retiring, and I thought and I was hoping that was fake news. And I said that on the call, but it wasn't. And Doc felt it was time, and he was wonderful on the conference call. There's been nobody like him. I've heard some, you know, really good hockey announcers through the years, and you know, I'm old enough to remember Dan Kelly and Foster Hewitt and a lot of guys who were back east at that time, Fred Cusick. But Doc, he's brilliant. He's and just a wonderful man, number one. What I loved about him the most, and I said this on the call, is he was as enthusiastic and as energized in a fourth overtime as he was at the beginning of the game. I mean, that takes incredible energy and skill and love for the game. And he has done so many iconic games. But the great thing about Doc is he could take an average game and make it great. And he could take a great game and make it classic. He came to work at the top of his skill level and gave you his all every broadcast. And I said to him, it's funny, just a couple of stories that I said on that conference call. I have a grandson who's 14 years old, and he plays hockey. And he's pretty good. And he asked me, I think last year, he said, "Hey, Pop-Pop, when are you going to retire?" And I said, I wanted to inspire him a little bit. I said, "Nate, listen, I said, I'm going to retire when I get to announce your debut in the National Hockey League." And he looked at me and he said, "Hey, Pop-Pop, can you get Doc Emmerich to announce that game?" So I thought that was about as good as it gets. And then I asked Doc, I said, "I'm just asking you for one other favor, and that is, would you leave me all of the unused verbs, adjectives, and adverbs that you have left?" Because, I mean, Doc had a way of describing things that was just magnificent. So a fabulous career, a really great guy, and I certainly wish him all the best in retirement.
Al, thank you so much for joining us. This was always certainly a pleasure for us, an outstanding conversation, and we so appreciate your time today. You take care.
You guys take care, too. And, you know, I don't know if you ever read Why Your Team Sucks with McGarry, but Ratto's codas to all of those are beyond hysterical. They are the Ray needs to write for, he's better than Saturday Night Live. I mean, he needs to write for somebody. But, guys, I want you to keep him in check. I want you to get his wife on the phone. We have to know what's inside that head. I've wondered all these years. Anyway, great to be with you guys. Take care, man.
And that's where our next guest comes from. He knows it very, very well. Rich Ornberger, former player in the league with the Pats, the Cards, the Chargers. He is a host on Extra 1360 down in San Diego. He is also an analyst for San Diego State. And I want to talk about one of the Aztecs' brightest, who is Daniel Brunskill, who played the game of his life, either getting a little help because they were double-teaming Aaron Donald. Whatever was working, it certainly worked up front. First of all, Rich, thanks for joining us here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. It's a pleasure to have someone on who actually knows what they're talking about in terms of offensive lines instead of us just saying, geez, they need to block better. It's good to figure out someone who can tell us why that happened. How are you today?
I'm doing really well, Damon. Thanks for having me on. Always glad to join you guys.
It's good to have you, like I said. So Brunskill went to San Diego State. I don't know if your paths crossed, but he had, you know, flashes last year which said, hey, here's a real decent player. This year, the entire 49ers offensive line was a disappointment right up until Aaron Donald got to town, which feels like an odd way to go about it because Donald destroys game plans, but he was hardly seen yesterday. What did the 49ers offensive line do to make quiet one of the best defensive players on the line of scrimmage in the entire sport?
Well, you know what? It's so funny. I want to give credit where credit's due, especially to a former Aztec. I did overlap as the analyst during his senior season on the Mesa at San Diego State, and he had extremely quick feet. You know, you could see that this was going to be a bright future. What he needed to do was mature a little bit physically. You know, mentally he was there. You know, from an athletic standpoint, he was there, but he was a light body guy. And so clearly he's added some pounds to his frame. You know, I also had the opportunity to call games that he played in for the San Diego Fleet, the Alliance of American Football team that appeared for just 8 games and then evaporated when that league fell apart. Talented guy, you know, and I think that really gave him his second chance and where the 49ers scouted him from. Now I'll give credit. The offensive line did a nice job. But here's really where you have to direct the credit, and it's to Coach Shanahan. He got the ball out of Jimmy G's hands quickly all night long. Three-step bang. I don't know what the Washington football team was thinking. They brought in Alex Smith, and they were still doing 7-step drops from the gun. I mean, it's just a dangerous situation. You can't have late-developing routes. You need to get the ball out of your hand fast. And that's exactly the reason why Aaron Donald was so neutralized, where he's so devastating in the passing game.
Is that why nobody else in the Rams' defensive line flashed either? Is it just that play design was such that they took the entire Ram defensive front out of the game?
Absolutely. That is it. You diagnose the whole thing. You know, against the Rams defense, that's a formidable group up front. Those are a bunch of bad dudes. It's obviously anchored by AD, but they have talent, and they push the pocket, and they pressure off the edge, and they do blitz. You know what I mean? They bring pressure, too. But again, when you're getting the ball at the hand of your quarterback and it's effective, you're going to have success against a team that wants to bring pressure. And so that was the right idea. That was the right concept. To really neutralize that whole group. But then on top of it, they got back to what makes them so great. And I'm talking about the 49ers since Shanahan took over. It's been all about this run game. Let's pound the rock. We're going to have a quarterback who can make the plays when we need him to, who's going to manage the game for the most part, who's going to be okay with handing the ball off sometimes 40 times a game. All right, but as long as you're doing that, you're winning football games, and that's exactly the formula they need to replicate week after week. It almost doesn't matter who your quarterback is. That's what makes this offense so special. They're using deception with their concepts. There's a lot of window dressing with their formations that confuses defense. Who has the ball? Sometimes with the motion, you're going to divide the defense where you're going to have linebackers flowing away from where the play is actually designed to hit. It's all really, really good. And when it's working, it looks great. So against the Rams last night, that's what we saw.
So I think we talked about that a lot today, and we all agree with you that Kyle Shanahan deserves a lot of the credit. But at the same time, if the line had performed the way it did the week before, I'm not sure even 2.5 seconds is fast enough. So it was definitely a lot better, and the personnel did not change, and it's really just a one-week span. What accounts for, you know, that level of improvement of an offensive line in 1 week? Is it just a matter of sort of communication and execution?
Yeah, it can be. It also, look, it's also about what your first of all, the score. You know what I mean? You know, when you have a lead and you're able to sustain that lead, you can do what you want to do offensively. When you're chasing points, it's a lot more difficult. It becomes a pass fest, you know, and you do have to take more chances offensively as far as later developing routes because you need chunk plays. But when you secure a lead, and you're able to sustain a lead, and you're able to lean on a team and milk the clock and do all the things like we just discussed that the 49ers want to do, you know, it's a lot easier to play offensive line when you're leading by, you know, double digits in the second half and you can sort of, you know, run the air out of the ball as opposed to chasing points. That's when you get into, you know, a difficult situation. Like, let's put it this way. If the Rams jumped out to a 14-point lead in the second half at any point. And you could have Aaron Donald sort of pinning his ears back, and you need Jimmy G to drop back and take some shots downfield. Well, you're going to have a lot harder of a time, but staying on schedule is so important. And look, I don't want to completely disavow the obligation to keep Jimmy G upright as an offensive lineman. Of course, I'm going to give them their credit. They double-teamed Aaron Donald. They did a nice job getting two men on him or sliding protections his way as much as they possibly could. But truly, the credit really belongs to the scheme and the fact that they were able to sustain a lead and count on the running game, which was effective. They were able to control the clock, and that's the reason why we saw a 49ers victory. And I wouldn't call it a shocking victory with the way they played last night, but again, like you spoke, how you were speaking when you introduced me, the trend of these two teams, it feels like a bit of a shock.
Rich Ohrenberger here on 95.7 The Game. Again, you were just explaining the intricacies of the offensive line, how the coaching scheme helps that line out and the quarterback and the offense out as much as anything. Well, when it comes to coaching them up and scheming, here comes Bill Belichick. You're familiar with Bill Belichick, having played for the Patriots a few years. How is it he makes every single opponent he faces play left-handed? He is better at taking away the primary strength of the other team, maybe better than anyone in football history. How does he do it?
Well, he just looks at the problems. You know, I mean, think about where are the problems with the 49ers? Well, obviously the run game is a problem. You got to find a way to slow down the run game. But then secondarily, George Kittle, I mean, he could ruin you if you let him. I mean, that is a talented player. So I can promise you defensively, he's going to be a marked man. He's going to be circled on every single player's iPad. You know, I can't say playbook anymore, iPad. And they're going to find a way to neutralize him as a threat. So that's part of it. You know, when the Patriots play the Chiefs, you know, they're going to take away Hill and Kelce, and they're going to say, all right, if you're going to beat us, it's going to have to be with the run against the lighter box, but we're going to trust our defensive line. If, you know, they're playing against the Raiders, you know, especially the Raiders, when they ran into the Patriots, they were coming off that victory against the Saints, and Darren Waller was just worn out. I mean, they threw to him something like 18 times. He had 14 receptions, something ridiculous like that. I don't think he was targeted once in that game. It's just what they do. They find where the problems are, and they stop those problems. And so they say, okay, if you want to beat us offensively, you're going to have to find a way to do it without what works best with your offense throughout this season so far. And they usually have the skill to do it. And especially with the secondary playing the way it is right now, they can do that. Now, it's up to the 49ers to do what they did against the Rams. If they can get out to an early lead and control the game with the run, that could be a victory, and that could put the Patriots on a three-game slide, which I'm not sure if that's ever happened in Belichick's time over the past 20 years with that team.
The 49ers offensive line is a relatively light group in just terms of sort of bulk. So they have to sort of make things happen more quickly. Is New England more or less adept at bullying lighter lines, or are they sort of a light defensive line themselves, and so it's going to be a kind of a different chess match than it was yesterday?
Well, I'll tell you what they'll do. First of all, they'll match personnel for personnel. So if the 49ers want to get big, if they want to put, you know, two tight ends or even three tight ends on the field at any point, or a tight end and a fullback, the defense of the New England Patriots is going to match with personnel. They'll get bigger people out there, more linebackers. They'll have less secondary on the field. And so they'll match personnel in that way. But, you know, against a lighter offensive line, especially one that wants to go east and west in the blocking scheme, a lot of zone schemes, you have to get penetration. So that's going to be the emphasis this week in Foxborough. They're going to be working against the scout team on penetrating the zone blocking scheme, because when you get all these blockers at different levels, what happens is the offensive line have to commit more to the defensive line, and you allow your linebackers to do what they want to do, which is scrape and make plays close to the line of scrimmage. So that's going to be a huge key for the 49ers, is making sure to get their offensive linemen, especially the interior three, up to the second level to get to these linebackers. Because if the game's played at the line of scrimmage, obviously, as we all know, the tackles will be made, you know, 1 or 2 yard gains, and that's no way to run the football. It puts you in those third and long situations, which is not where you want to be against the Patriots defense that's going to blitz you off the roof and show you some exotic blitzes you haven't seen on film yet.
Something we've been talking about today that essentially plays like the ones to Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk last night basically turn into run plays for the purposes of what the 49ers offense wants to do. As an offensive lineman, do you basically think of those screen passes and whatnot as run plays more than pass plays?
Yeah, to a certain extent, because, you know, your blocks are so much more important on those plays. When you're pass blocking, you know, if you think about it, after the ball's out, you could disengage, right? You know, because at that point, the threat's gone. You know, the ball's in the air. It's going 35 yards down the field. And, you know, your big, fat, 350-pound defensive lineman isn't going to make a play 30 or 40 yards away from the line of scrimmage where your battle was fought. But with these screen passes, you need to lock on. You cannot take for granted the emphasis that you can have on a play that's near the line of scrimmage, even if it's out toward the sideline. You know, some of these bubble screens, wide out screens, some of these fly sweeps that, you know, they're thrown from the gun. They count as passes because a forward pass is made, but it's all happening behind the line of scrimmage. So you can't disengage. It really is. It's, you know, I mean, throwback to the Bill Walsh era. You have to stay engaged with your block because those defensive linemen can make tackles as long as they're running parallel to the line of scrimmage, on shorter gains.
Rich Orenberger, great to talk to you. Thanks for giving us some finer points of offensive line play. We learned an awful lot. I know that you are a Penn Stater. You follow me, so you know I got roots in Indiana. When the Nittany Lions lose in Bloomington on Saturday, will you know that Big Ten football season's officially underway?
You know what? I knew you were a Hoosier. I just knew it. Something about, you know, the tone of voice, the intonation. No, listen, I mean, that is going to be quite a matchup. You can never tell what's going to happen in opening week of college football. I'm just glad they're playing, frankly.
Absolutely. Penn State, by the way, is only 22-1 in 23 appearances against Indiana. So good luck to you. You usually don't need it, but I'll just throw it out there, Rich. Thank you very much for joining us. Have yourself a great week.
Thanks. Same to you guys.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.